3 weeks ago, we ran an item talking about the role pine forests can play in sequestering carbon in New Zealand to help us meet our emissions targets by 2035 and then on to 2050. The communications manager for the Forest Owners Association, Don Carson, said he loved native trees for all sorts of reasons, but for locking up carbon in the necessary time frame, they don't compete. Take it forward 100 years and they do, but we don't have that long. Susan Murray with more.
Now, this really annoyed two retired Auckland University lecturers. Dr. Neil Mitchell taught ecology, conservation and environmental science for 40 years. Dr. John Craig was a professor of environmental management for decades. He now runs a conservation estate called Tahi on Northland's east coast near Whangarei. Country Life, in fact, visited him in 2015. Neil Mitchell says pines may sequester carbon quickly for the first 20 years, but 10 years later they're cut down and most of the carbon is dispersed and lost. Both men say give Indigenous forests a chance. The professor of the School of Forestry at Canterbury University, Ewan Mason, also wrote to Country Life saying there are a great variety of views on exotics versus natives, some well-informed, some based on fairy tales, and the truth is reasonably complicated. One of the problems seems to come from these things called lookup tables produced by MPI. They give a figure for how much carbon a pine tree or an Indigenous forest sequesters in any particular year. Professor Ewan Mason says from all the measurements he's seen so far, Indigenous forests, on average, haven't performed as well as the lookup tables indicate they should, while radiata pine has outperformed the table on average. He says one needs to ask why, what Indigenous species have been planted, where, and how have they been managed. So as he said, complicated. Now back to Neil Mitchell and John Craig. They've been working in Northland with planted native forests on retired pasture. In Northland, planting the appropriate species, they say there are really good growth rates and some natives are very dense and lock up a heap of carbon. What they've recorded in Northland, they say could be done elsewhere in New Zealand, although Neil admits results are likely to be lower than in Northland. But working with the current tables, they say, is flawed. John Craig picks up the discussion.
I think it's very sad that we're advocating planting exotics when it's not just climate change we should be dealing with. We've also got to deal with a biodiversity crisis, and natives are the best in both areas. We need to pursue both of them together, in my view.
And when you say it's flawed, Neil, when I do look at some of those tables, it does look as though pines do, especially in that 25 time frame, they are sequestering generally more carbon than the native counterparts?
Well, there's two parts to that. First of all, the MPI table is based on Manuka Kanaka, not forest, which is why it's much less. I mean, we would agree with their figure, no doubt. However, if you plant, like up at Tahi, where planting native forests from scratch, well, the rate they grow at is a northern broadleaf forest. You'd only need about two-thirds of the area of pines after 30 years because of the amount of carbon they sequester. It's very true of the northern species. The trees are so carbon-rich. Pines actually do not contain that much carbon compared to most of our native trees. And like a puriri, for example, it contains 2.5 times as much carbon for the same size. We've measured it, you know, and that the rate of growth of these forests is huge.
Does it still not come back just to that the time frame thing, that some of these targets we need to be getting by 2035, you know, such a short time away, that natives wouldn't be able to achieve some of that in the short term? I think maybe no one's arguing, are they, about perhaps the longer term?
The way I read what was said is the targets for 2035 be part of carbon zero by 2050. That's what, 30 years away. Well, I don't think even pines do that. By 2050, if you were to plant 380,000 hectares of pines now, yeah, they would do whatever that sum says. If you were to plant a much less area in native forests, you'd get the same result.
Susan, I think the issue about timeframes is that a pine is definitely faster for the first 20 years, but once you get to 20 years, then the natives overtake it. And the other problem with pines, of course, is we chop it down and then reactivate that carbon in a fairly short time frame, whereas with natives, it just stays there.
And keeps growing.
With the cut down trees, though, we are, say, wanting to put more of that into building and furniture, so it will lock some of that carbon up. So it will have sequestered some during its lifetime and then it will have remained locked up. Is that fair?
Well, it's fair. And if you look at the figures, we actually use a minority of pine as timber. There's an enormous amount used for paper and for sort of other products that require the wood to be chewed up and processed. If we could use 80% of the pine as timber, then we'd have a much better result than we do currently.
John, on your Tahi farming and conservation estate in Northland, what sort of figures and what are you seeing in a real life example that can give us another way, maybe apart from pine trees?
Well, basically, I consider that we are carbon and biodiversity farmers, and currently you can't be paid well for either of those because the carbon that's stored is not currently acknowledged by government. And you saw the document I sent you, which has got the figures in it.
And looking at that table, John, yes, so in Northland, you have got a hardwood podocarp by year 22. You're saying it's actually sequestering more carbon than pine trees do.
Oh, and it, as you go forward, it sequesters more and more. It's much faster than the pine trees after that 22. But carbon should pay for the sort of work that happens here. And then the added benefit is biodiversity gains, where we have enormous numbers of rare birds, especially have come in, and we have very high densities of birds. So we can do that everywhere if you use natives, whereas if you plant pines, there's not that many native birds that like living in pines.
Comment on the elephant in the room with pines. It's the seeds. Pine trees and other conifers, they seed from quite a young age and their seeds disperse everywhere across the environment. You know, as down here in Queenstown, for example, there's a massive wildling pine control program underway. And across great swathes of the countryside, wilding pines are like devouring the landscape. The more pines we plant, the more of this massive weed problem we have as well. But that's, as I say, that's the elephant in the room as well.
Is it a case too that with the ETS that natives are disadvantaged against exotics in terms of how their carbon is calculated?
Yes, they're absolutely disadvantaged in terms of how much carbon is acknowledged, and they're also more expensive to start off with. And we have a program that basically for pines, the government will pay forward on carbon. So you get an extra gain, which is taken off later on. If we did the same for natives, we could equalise the problem of more expensive to plant in the first place.
Again, I suppose it just comes back to the time frame thing. Do we still need pines to help do a little bit of the heavy lifting in these earlier days? Would you agree with that?
I wouldn't.
I wouldn't either.
The tables are not readily available. That's the problem. Like, I've sent it to you. I've given it to the minister. It's gone to MPI. It's gone to DOC, etc. But it's not acknowledged. So at the moment, you're still paid as if it's just Manuka and Kanaka that's grown a higher latitude. So nothing as fast as up here, even for Manuka and Kanaka.
With the MPI information, for pines, they carefully, gave it region by region. Well, okay, you could do it for native. There's vast databases of tree measurements being done over decades. You know, for native, again, they've just got this one column. Well, I had a look at what I think is the original work that came from. The original work looked at it regionally.
Why do you think they're not being looked at or used? Why have they been ignored, John?
So I think it's a political issue, and hopefully it'll get solved, and the sooner the better.
And will we need to? Some of the issue that has got the rural community up in arms is the fact that we are putting pine trees in, we're taking land out of sheep and beef farming. Would, in order to meet some of these greenhouse gas emission reductions, would we still need to be taking quite a lot of land out of sheep and beef? And, but you'd be saying, but it could go into natives rather than pines, although one would have to say too that pines do have an export value, don't they? You would still say we would have to remove some sheep and beef country in order to reach some of these targets.
How about converting land that's just coming out of pine rotation back into natives?
Also, I think farmers are pretty astute in terms of knowing how to earn money, and there are large areas of hill country which is pretty marginal pasture, and it could earn a lot more from carbon if it was planted in natives. And if the carbon content was recognised. So we just have to use real figures instead of the ones that we have at the moment, which are wrong and are the problem.
The point keeps needs to be making. Carbon is carbon. And to pretend that pine carbon is worth more than native carbon is complete nonsense.
And just going back, you know, to that question I asked earlier, John, what would your reply be about do we still need to take more land out of, say, sheep and beef and put it into natives in order to reach these targets?
Well, you do, and as Neil pointed out very early on, you need less natives than you need pine, so you'd have to take less farmland out of production if you went to natives, as distinct from going with pines.
Looking, another thing I thought was interesting was the pest control. If you can get rid of pests, if we could control pests, what impact would that have on native forests and their ability to sequester more carbon? How significant and important is pest control?
I remain shocked that this hasn't actually been addressed. Can I just try to paint a little sound picture for you? Imagine you're a tree, your arms outstretched. You can only feed in the day. Your fingers, you know, use your fingers to catch anything that goes past and consume it. Now, at night, you stop. However, at night, possum come out and they like to have a nibble on your fingertips. And so, you know, gradually, your ability to catch food diminishes. And so you actually stop growing. Oh, and by the way, during the day, a goat or some deer comes along, has a nibble at your skin on your legs. And so you can take up less water from the ground. That's actually what's happening in our native forests. And so, of course, they're less able gradually over several years to be able to sequester carbon.
The goats and the deer also take out all the associated shrubs and small trees, which are storing carbon as well.
I've got some working figures. You know, a possum will probably eat 1%. Well, it'll cause a 1% reduction in one possum in a hectare. You've got 10 possum a hectare, which is not uncommon. It's 10% of the sequestration that year has gone. Of course, it's cumulative. It's 10% on whatever's left the next year. And then you've got everything else going on at ground level.
Mm. Maybe we should put all our effort into pest control and not even planting more native things. We could be just improving the native forests that we've got struggling along at the moment.
The Predator-Free 2050 program, it seems to be unacknowledged that this is going to achieve massive more carbon sequestration in the native forests. Should they be, that program be getting the carbon credits from all this wonderful work they're doing?
Yep. And let's reward farmers that grow natives. and care for them with pest control.
Yeah, if you link it all together, pest control then becomes, for example, a tax deductible expense against the income.
Yep, it would. Yep.
So what would, run that past me again?
Well, if you're farming carbon, then you can claim the expenses against that, which would include pest control. And at the moment, we don't really treat carbon in native forests as a business. Why can't we sell carbon? After all, the current government plan is we're going to buy carbon from other countries. Why can't we be the people who sell it to other countries? Because there's an enormous number of them who have no ability to achieve what we can achieve.
And sell it to them off our native forests.
Well, look, there's about 10 million hectares of native forest in New Zealand. Much of it, I assume, is under the stewardship of Department of Conservation. Much of it is infested with pests. Now, step one, you actually control all these pests and predators that are on government-owned land. The government should actually look to their own backyard first and fix the problems that they actually own. So, you know, you fix that one, you solve a whole lot of both biodiversity and carbon sequestration problems. But then because the forests have been so damaged, there's another whole industry, if you'd like, in there, of then making sure species that have become lost from local areas or whatever actually become re-established. And so we get back once more the flourishing forests we should have. How's that for a legacy for a politician?
I'd like to, can I modify that version slightly? I think I heard from Neil that the government should be doing pest control. Well, for me, the first thing they've got to do is put a real price on carbon of native trees, and then it will pay the government to do pest control because they can earn more from their trees, but it also allows everyone else in New Zealand society to earn the real price of having natives and looking after them.
I said the benefits are huge.
And the other thing that you can quote is that Tahi is an example of where we actually believe so much in this that we're doing it now and hoping the government's going to catch up.
That was John Craig ending the discussion. We also heard from Neil Mitchell, and they were talking to Susan.